Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we bring you the magical and innovative worlds of artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create, along with special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their fields. We love to share great conversation with extraordinary women, women you may be very familiar with and others you may not know. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am the editor-in-chief of Women Create. It is my pleasure to welcome you, our listeners, and all of our guests as we explore the ups and downs, challenges and triumphs, exhilaration and immense joy of living a creative life. A creative life is a life that's rarely stagnant and always leading us down surprising paths. Thank you for being part of our creative world, the world of Women Create. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. Today, we are speaking with Jenny Fannin-Steele, who is a master milliner and owner of Formay Millinery, Judith M. Millinery Supply House, Hatboxes USA, and now The Hat Shop. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Jenny, and then we're going to get into some questions. Jenny is amazing. We featured her in Women Create last year, and she has already had a year that blows my mind. So Jenny is a world-renowned milliner, awarded for her skill of creating and sculpting hats by hand using the highest quality and rare materials from across the globe. She is recognized for her dedication to the craft and quality in her artistic creations. The art of millinery is a technique that dates back centuries through molding straw and wool over wooden hat forms. Taking from traditional millinery techniques, she is known throughout the world for her unique process of sculpting hats on a braid machine from the 1800s. She is a five-time featured milliner of the Kentucky Derby, and in 2019, she was one of 50 women entrepreneurs selected as a Tory Burch Fellow through the Tory Burch Foundation. She has three co-branded hat patterns through McCall Patterns. She is the author of the book, The Making of a Milliner, and has collaborated with exciting brands and dignitaries such as Woodford Reserve, Vineyard Vines, Jay Peterman, Oprah Winfrey, Michelle Obama, Madonna, and Barbara Cochran, to name a few. She and her husband, Bart, own four hat companies and just celebrated opening their third hat shop in Kentucky. I'm exhausted just talking about all you've done, Jenny. You're amazing. Welcome. Oh,
thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh my God. So I know you've had a busy week opening your new hat shop. I have so much I want to ask you, but let's just start at the very beginning for people who may not know. What is a milliner? What goes into making a hat from scratch?
So a milliner is someone, like you just mentioned, who makes a hat from scratch. And what does that mean? I use a 200-year-old technique called blocking, where I take raw millinery materials, and that could be sename that's made from a plant in the Philippines, to felt that's made from Czech Republic. And I take these raw materials and I mold them over wooden hat forms. So a milliner is someone who actually makes these hats from scratch. I'm not just taking a hat that's been already created and then decorating it. It's about a 3 to 4 day process to make each hat from scratch. Once I mold it over the wooden form, then it has to dry for 1 or 2 days. And then from there, I hand sew it and put it all together to make it into a hat.
So I am guessing before you even get to that point, you are consulting with your client and talking about what they're looking for a custom hat. Do they come in and meet with you when possible? Do you spend time sort of envisioning the creation?
Yes. So when they're able to come to my hat shop and meet with me in person, you know, a lot of times people, they're going to an event, they want to wear a hat. Sometimes they've never, ever worn a hat before, so they're not quite sure where to start. You know, a lot of times they'll bring in their outfit, or they'll bring in pictures of hats or fascinators that they've seen on the internet or on my website, and kind of go in that direction. But really, you know, when someone comes in, we try on different hat shapes. That way we can determine what shape looks best on their physique, you know, because your body type, your hair length, your face shape, it all plays a part on what works best. You know, not all of us can wear every single hat shape. Some of us can, but not most. So we start there and just determine what's going to look best and complement you the best. And then we look at the raw materials. Then we look at the straws and the felts, depending on what season you're looking at. And we pick the raw material. And then we go and we look at all my trims. A lot of my trims I use are from the 20s and 30s from France, things that I find out over the world. I like to use one of a kind trims and pieces and materials in my work. So they can see the materials up close and touch them and feel them. And we pick the trims, the feathers, the flowers, and kind of assemble an idea of what the finished hat will look like. And then in a few days' times, usually it's, you know, I'm about a month or two out with custom pieces, but I put it all together and send them their creation that I made just for them.
That's amazing. And sort of, what are some of the reactions? It takes a certain amount of confidence to walk into the world in a bespoke, big, beautiful hat. And what do people say?
That's one reason why I love doing what I do, is seeing a person put on their hat for the first time, especially if they've never worn a hat before. It transforms them. And they'll put on a hat and you'll see them stand a little taller. They'll smile a little bigger. And it brings out this confidence that some of them didn't even realize they had inside them. I've had people cry. I've had people, after they've worn the hat out, they'll say that they have always felt invisible, but wearing my hat made them feel special and beautiful for the first time in a long time. And so it's so great to hear those types of things and see my clients respond in that way. I just love it. But, you know, I really get to know people on a personal level when I'm starting this process. I find out, are you the life of a party, or do you like to blend in? You know, because all of that plays a big part of how I finish a hat. You know, if I'm starting with the same hat style for more than one person, but someone says, I like to be the center of attention, and then another likes to just kind of blend in and wants more of a classic finish, I'm going to finish them very differently. You know, it's almost like a hairstylist, you know, or therapist. You know, you get to know them on a really personal level. And I really enjoy that about my work.
I love it. Yeah. Well, I know you have a family business that seems to keep growing around hats, but I want to back up to the beginning. I know you studied fashion design in college, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
Tell us how this all came about, how you knew this was the route for you.
Yes. Well, to start even before college, I've been sewing since I was 5 years old. My mother taught me cross stitch, but my mom, my grandmother, my aunt, they all made the clothes that my sister and I wore. They made the dolls that we played with and the toys. So I've always grown up around sewing. And so it was natural for me to go to fashion design school. And I went to the Art Institute of Colorado in Denver to pursue fashion design. And I really loved costumes and the ballet and the theater. And I thought that's what I was going to do. I wanted to make costumes for the ballet. However, when I went to college in Colorado at that time, if you weren't into Western wear or ski wear, there weren't a lot of other opportunities. So I ended up moving to Chicago to pursue costumes. And that's when I started making costumes for movies and commercials and Cirque du Soleil. And I did a Grammy dress for Margaret Cho and just loved the costume industry. But I always loved hats and kind of felt that something was a little missing. And I did dabble in hat making with my costumes, but never really knew what I was doing. There was a woman in Chicago that was doing a presentation about the traditional techniques of hat making. And a light bulb went off and I was like, oh, I really need to learn more about this. And there wasn't a lot offered in the United States for learning the traditional techniques. So I ended up going to Australia and I did an apprenticeship. Since I already knew how to hand sew, it came very natural. And that's when I was like, this is what I'm meant to do. I started hat making in my basement in Chicago, doing art shows and selling my hats in my little tent at art shows throughout the Illinois area. People started to like what I did. And it really started out as a hobby, just something to do and something fun. But yeah, people started to like what I did. And one of the shows that I did, the woman next to me was from Louisville, Kentucky. And she said, have you ever thought of making hats for the Derby? Being from Colorado and from Illinois, you know, we hear the Derby, but we don't really know what the whole hype is all about, especially here in Kentucky. And so the following year, I went to Kentucky and I made custom hats and I sold them out of the trunk of my car and sold out in a day. And I thought, wow, people really like hats here. So for 6 years, I would go to Kentucky. I'd rent a hotel room for a couple of months. I'd bring all my sewing machines and hat blocks and raw materials and make hats out of my hotel room. And then I would do trunk shows at boutiques and hotels. And during that time, I fell in love with the town and the people and just was amazed of how supportive Kentucky was for small businesses. It was really different from a big city like Chicago. And eventually wanted to move here. Took a couple years to convince my husband to leave Chicago, but eventually we packed up and moved, and it was great. I was able to take the hats out of my house and put them in a little art studio and then grow it from there.
That's amazing. So I am one of those people, I have never been to the Derby. I mean, just reading your story and meeting you makes me want to go, but tell me what it's like. I can imagine a sea of colorful hats. I want to sort of see, are people trying to outdo each other? Who could have the most amazing hat?
So certainly some, yeah. You will see everything at the Kentucky Derby. That's for sure. There are no rules and no guidelines like some of the other races that exist like the Royal Ascot. There are very strict rules and you'll see top hats and very traditional types of hats there. But at the Kentucky Derby, you'll see flamingos on people's heads and horses. So yes, there certainly are people who want to outdo each other, but if you're not wearing a hat, you're standing out because everybody wears a hat. And yes, color, you know, feathers and flowers and really, like I said, anything goes. And hats started traditionally as a big brimmed hat. There's a saying that the bigger the hat, the bigger the luck. So that's why the big brims, you know, started and still does exist today. Fascinators are becoming much more popular. I think the Royal Wedding with Kate Middleton really brought out that trend, and it still exists today. And more people are embracing that style. But yeah, I mean, people start planning for the Derby months in advance, if not when Derby ends for the following year. And we're getting ready to celebrate Derby 150. Derby's always the first Saturday in May, and that's going to be the Kentucky Derby 150. So it's going to be a very, very big year, and people are already planning.
I love what you said about this idea of the bigger the brim, the better the luck. Yeah. So do people feel like their hats bring them that luck when they go to the Derby?
Oh, yes, they do. Absolutely. And you think that people go to the Derby to watch the horses. That's not always the case. They go to see the hats.
Yeah, people watching, yeah, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a big part of the celebration of the Derby.
I know that you and your husband, Bart, have actually seen a need to keep the hat industry alive, and you've taken on businesses that might have otherwise folded. So I want to talk about this. You have one of three millinery supply companies left in the U.S. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, wow. It's called Judith M. Millinery Supply. A lot of people think I'm Judith M. I'm not. Judith M. is a real person. She started the business 30 years ago. Back then, there were multiple supply houses and hat shops. And, you know, the hat industry was just really different back in the day. And she was out of a small town out of LaGrange, Indiana. If you're not familiar with the place, it's near Shipshawana, which is an Amish community. And she primarily did web sales. It was a small town, so she didn't get a lot of foot traffic, but mainly did hat sales through the web. And she wanted to retire after 30 years, and she's in her 70s. And since we had already kind of established a name ourselves in the hat industry, she reached out to us during COVID. If we wanted to carry on her name and the business and the legacy, and we couldn't see it end. We did the best we could and try to make it happen. And we moved it from LaGrange, Indiana to LaGrange, Kentucky, which is where we live. We opened up a retail store so that way people from the public can come in and shop. You don't need a wholesale account to shop there. But yes, so we supply raw materials, not just to people like myself, but to universities, to opera houses, to movie production houses, to to their costume and millinery departments to sell, to make hats for whatever projects they're working on. So you'll see our hat boxes, like on The Marvelous Miss Maisel. You'll see hats made for Harry Potter, Star Wars, even the military. A lot of the hats that you see on TV shows and movies, their supplies come from us. So it's quite unique to see.
Wow.
Yeah, my husband's always saying, because he works at a Judith M, and he's always saying, you'll never believe who I got a supply order from. And he'll tell me Cirque du Soleil or Disney in Japan or something. And I'm like, you better have included my business card in there.
Oh my God. Yeah,
he's always seeing some really cool names that come through.
And then you also have a hat box business. Is that run out of the Judith M location?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Hat Boxes USA. When I first started in the millinery business, I was getting my hat boxes through a company in Canada. And they were hexagonal. I loved them. They're really nice shape and really sturdy. And they had been around for about 100 years. And then they decided to close up shop and no one was going to continue the business. I thought, well, my hats always come with a hat box. And I searched high and low for hat boxes and I couldn't find what I was looking for. You know, there was some flimsy type boxes that existed for like wreaths and things like that. And they were just never deep enough. And also, you know, having a smaller hat shop, I didn't have the storage space. So I couldn't have hat boxes that were already constructed. I needed some that come collapsible. That way it was easy storage, and then I would make them as I needed them. So I ended up finding a packaging company out of New Jersey, and they worked with recycled materials, the mill that they worked with. And so I worked with them on creating three different hat box templates of exactly what I wanted, the depth of the box I wanted. I wanted them hexagonal, like the boxes I used to use, and the sizes that I needed to fit the multiple hats that I create. And so I made three templates of exactly what I was looking for and had these great hat boxes. And then my husband, who hadn't yet kind of gotten into the hat business with me, said, you know what, if you're having this issue, other people are too. Why don't we start a hat box company? And that's how he started in the hat world with me. And that's how Hat Boxes USA was born. And so we now sell on Amazon and Wayfair and our website and in the stores. And yeah.
You make it sound so easy.
Oh, it's not. It didn't start because we were hoping, you know, because Amazon, they charge like a monthly fee to be listed on there. And we were just hoping to cover that monthly fee. And it's turned into this big hat box business. And who would have known? Yeah.
So do you employ a staff?
Yes. Yes. We have four people that work out of Judith M. And then I have two people that work out of Form A Millinery. And then I have about six stitchers that work for me out of their home at different times of the year, depending on the projects that I have going on. I work and collaborate with a lot of different companies. And so that's when I need a lot of stitchers on board to help me with those different projects.
So here's a question. Our magazines feature a lot of creative entrepreneurs like you. And how do you handle all of these logistics of running a business, but also staying creative? You have your studio where you're creating amazing pieces. How do you juggle that?
Well, it certainly can be challenging for sure, because I mean, that's why I started these businesses is to be creative and to continue making these hats from scratch. You know, I do get calls from manufacturers from overseas saying, we can make your hats for you and take that off your plate, which is wonderful. But that's part of what I love about hat making is doing it myself and having that creative part of it. But yes, it certainly does take up a lot of my creative time. And one thing that I tell artists, especially budding artists who want to get into opening their own businesses, they think that they spend all this time making their art, where it's really 80% of it is running your business and 20% is making your art. And it's sad to say, but unfortunately, that's kind of how it turns out. But, you know, that's why I try to employ an A team in each of these businesses. So that way I trust that they're going to run these businesses and these different aspects of the different things that we're doing. So that way I can still focus on what's important to me and my custom work. These collaborations that I have with these different companies like Vineyard Vines and J. Peterman, for instance, you know, I try to delegate some of that stuff out so I can focus on the custom that comes in and building my relationships and building and continuing to build a brand. So yeah, it is certainly challenging, especially like opening this new store and trying to staff it with a really great team, which we have so far found some amazing people. But right now it's taking a lot of my time out of Forme Millinery, which is where I spend most of my time. But that's just the way it is right now.
It's amazing because you have, what I love is it seems like you are open to saying yes, rather than saying, wow, I can't take on another thing. It's like you realize if you don't step in, these businesses may not continue. So for people who are listening, it's unbelievable. It hasn't even been a week since you opened up your latest shop, the Hap Chop. Now tell us how that came about and where that is in relationship geographically to Forme Millinery.
Yes. So this new venture called the Hat Shop, it was not our intention to open up another shop, at least this soon. So there was a company that existed here in Louisville named D's Crafts. And they were around for 52 years. They were a store, a craft store that did framing. They sold home goods, a lot of shabby chic type stuff. But then they really built a Derby presence of hat decorating during the Derby months. They didn't sell hats all year round, but during Derby, they really celebrated hat decorating, which is very different than what Forme Millinery and Judith M does. So Forme Millinery, what I do is all custom, handmade, couture type of hats. Judith M is more focused on the supplies. So what D's did is they worked and supported hat decorators. So people would come in and get hat bases that were already made and, you know, big brimmed hat, derby type hats, but they weren't decorated yet. And then they would pick out the feathers and flowers and trims and ribbons. And then the person would either put it all together with some hot glue or hand sewing, or D's staff did it for them. And they did roughly, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 hats every Derby season within a 3 to 4 month span. And when they announced that they were retiring, the town kind of freaked out a little bit. So, you know, there's about 150,000 people that go to the Derby. So there's a lot of people that need to make hats one way or another, whether that's through decorating or a custom hat or so, or whatever it may be. So when D's decided to close down, there were a lot of people, you know, and they also cater to a particular price point as well. Obviously very different from my price point for a custom hat. So when D's decided to retire, we thought, you know, someone needs to step in and take over this hat decorating market. And since we already had a relationships with the manufacturers that make the raw materials in the Philippines and France and China and Germany and all these places, we already had a relationship already started with them. These manufacturers of these raw materials, however, also make the bases. We just have never worked with them in that way. So we decided, since we already have these relationships started, why don't we just work with them also in a different way with the hat shop and have them also make hat bases for us? So we have about 4,000 hat bases and fastener bases being made right now, manufactured for us right now. A lot of them are coming out of the Philippines to be made and ready to go for Derby starting in January.
And you're talking about Derby that starts in May 2024. All those thousands are currently being made.
Yes, right now. Yes. So within 2 months of D's shutting down, we have opened up this new hat shop, started all the manufacturing of these raw goods and hat bases. We didn't take over exactly what D's is doing. We're not doing home goods. We're not doing crafts in that sense, but we're strictly just a hat shop and we're just across the street from where they used to be. But we are a hat shop of all sorts. We have a men's hat lounge. So you can come in and get a top hat, you can get a fedora, you can get a cowboy hat. We sell Stetson. We sell brands from all over the world, actually. So it's not a four-man millinery hat shop. It's a hat shop of all brands, all price points. You can buy women's finished hats and winter hats. We have a kids section, but we also have the hat decorating section. So you'll be able to buy a hat base. We have a huge feather bar, a flower bar, ribbons from all over the world. And then we also have a hat bar. And what that is we want to create experiences here at this hat shop. We don't want to just be a regular retail hat shop. We want to create experiences. So at the hat bar, you can come in, get a felt hat that's already made. So like a fedora, for instance. You pick out your trims, your feathers, your hat bands, and then we can brand with branding tools, initials, pictures. We can burn the hat to kind of give a little rustic look. It's a big trend that's happening right now. I don't know if you've heard of a hat bar, but that's what people can do. They can come in off the street or they can make a reservation for a group. And we have a really fun interactive experience. And you leave with a finished hat within an hour's time because the hat's already made to start. And it's decorated the way that you want. And we also have other hat experiences, monthly themed hat experiences. Like next week, we have a Barbie hat experience. So you and your doll, you can come in and decorate a Barbie hat to kind of celebrate the Barbie movie that was just out. And then we have next month, a Taylor Swift hat experience where you can make a pink cowboy Taylor Swift hat. In January, we have Stevie Nicks. So you can come and decorate a top hat with a big ostrich feather and flowers, and we'll play Stevie Nicks on the tunes. And then closer to Derby, we'll have hat workshops where we'll be teaching how to take different embellishing materials to incorporate into your Derby hats, like sculpting horsehair or creating feather flowers and doing ribbon work that you can then incorporate into your own hats that you're making for the Derby or whatever you're working on. So it's just a conglomerate of many, many hat experiences.
Now, you live in a hat epicenter, so to speak. Now, what about the rest of the country? Are hats coming back? You know, do people need to be convinced to start wearing hats again?
Well, I think hats are becoming more and more popular. And I know that because there's more and more people that are getting into hat decorating and the hat bar experiences. Because we're certainly not the only hat bar in the United States. It's really big, like in Texas, for instance, and in California. So, you know, a lot of people are getting into this interactive hat experience. And you see, you know, a lot of celebrities obviously are trendsetters. You'll see them wearing hats. Taylor Swift, you know, she wears a cowgirl hat all the time. A hat is such a great accessory. And I think a lot of people are realizing that it can be just like your handbag or a piece of jewelry. It's a cherry and finishing touch to an outfit. And it doesn't have to be something fancy like a derby hat or a fascinator. I also tell people too, there's also no reason why you can't be warm and fashionable. You don't need to put a stocking cap on, you know, let's dress it up. Let's put a cloche on, a winter cloche or a furry hat, you know. But yeah, I think hats are coming back. And sometimes you just got to find that right hat that works best for you and put it on.
Well, I'm biased. I love hats. I have a bunch of vintage hats. Can't say I wear them that often, but I love them. And I love the original hat boxes they came in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I started my career in newspapers and I was in my 20s, but it was sort of the end of an era where pretty much every man in the newsroom would come in his coat and hat and put them on the rack. And every time they would go out to lunch, they put the hat on and the coat. And I must have just assumed that was the way things were and taken it for granted. I just don't see men wearing hats like that anymore, or women. I mean, my generation, not so much, but my mom remembers going shopping with her grandmother downtown and you wore your hat and your gloves and it was a tradition. And I really hope we bring it back.
Yeah. I mean, yes, when you compare it to those times, absolutely. It's been a big change. I blame it on the big hair in the 60s, the big bouffants, you know, the bigger the hair, you didn't want to put a hat on it. And I think too, that the United States has just become a real casual country. Even just flying on a plane, if you, I mean, people are flying on planes like in their pajamas and slippers, you know, I mean, we're just a lot more casual of a place than we used to be. And it's unfortunate, but I will tell you that when you do dress up and do put a hat on, people notice, and they really like it. They like to see that. And so I think you just got to feel confident in yourself that this is how I want to look, and wear that hat, wear those gloves.
So you mentioned going to Australia to pick up on certain techniques. Mm-hmm. You said there weren't, at the time, there weren't resources in the States for you to learn certain techniques. Are there countries where hat making is really a big thing? And are there countries that we should be looking toward who are doing more with hats than we are?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Especially Europe and Australia, not just with the horse racing scene, but when it comes to millinery, it's a very respected profession. People get degrees in millinery, and people respect the craft. They understand the craft. You know, a lot of times I'm having to tell people what millinery even is, or even the term a milliner. And, you know, but those are also parts of the world that people still dress up. You know, even look at the Royal Ascot. It is so different from the Derby in the sense that there's a dress code to go to the Royal Ascot, where with a Kentucky Derby, anything kind of goes. they want to keep those traditions of how it used to be back in the day, and to be just more elevated. And I wish the Kentucky Derby did a little bit of that, more of that. But, you know, I guess whatever's going to put a hat on your head, go for it. So, but yeah, you know, there are other parts of the world that still embrace the hat more than we do. And everything goes around in a circle in the fashion industry. So, but I do think hats are coming back slowly but surely. Yeah. Just in a different way.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you are a 5-time featured milliner of the Kentucky Derby. What does that mean? How do you achieve that status?
Yes. So the Kentucky Derby is 150th year. I am the second milliner to ever be featured by Churchill Downs in 150 years, essentially. This will be a feature. I will be a feature milliner again for 150th. And for Churchill Downs, because since hats have been around since the very beginning, their very first race in the 1800s, they recognized my craft and what I do and my passion for hat making. You know, there's a lot of people who make hats, or what I call hat, who decorate hats, like hat decorators. But for them to recognize me for my craft, and me being even a local person, is just, it's truly an honor. I kind of think of it as winning the Miss America pageant for hats, I guess. You know, because Churchill Downs is such a staple in the racing community. And so just to be recognized and for my passion of what I do is truly an honor.
So for people who don't know, what is Churchill Downs?
Churchill Downs is a racetrack in Louisville, Kentucky, and it's where the Kentucky Derby takes place. And it's been around since the late 1800s. And I mean, most people have heard of the Kentucky Derby. And so what you're seeing on TV, that happens here in Louisville, Kentucky, and it's here every year. It doesn't travel. And it always happens the first Saturday in May. And this coming year will be the 150th year.
You're already planning. So that's what, about 5 months out, you're already planning. Does that get you nervous? Does that get you invigorated? How do you sort of pace yourself knowing what the next few months will be like?
It doesn't make me nervous. I love when people plan ahead. So yeah. When people are reaching out to me 6 months, 8 months in advance, I love that, because it means I can actually take my time a little bit with those customers, opposed to it being just full speed ahead the closer we get to Derby. So luckily, the collaborations that I work with, the different brands that I create hats for, they're planning a year in advance. So that's helpful. But customers, yeah, because it's the 150, I do have people that have reached out already planning their Derby attire, which is great. But yes, leading up to the Derby, I would say 2 months prior to Derby, it is a madhouse. I mean, I'm not sleeping, you know, I'm doing interviews, I'm doing hat experiences, I am traveling to customers' private locations, they're coming in, people are meeting with me after hours, you know, it is absolutely bananas.
I foresee you doing this for many years to come. So I have to ask you, what is your self-care ritual during those times? How do you keep it all together?
It's still a work in progress. I would say that it's something that I've really tried to focus on in the last few years more than I did in the beginning, because I've been doing this 16 years and I didn't really do a whole lot of self-care. But I have an 8-year-old daughter now with my husband. We're still married through all this. And, you know, yeah, I try to take time off. When I leave work, I try to leave work at work. I mean, yeah, we try to go out to dinner once a week as a family. You know, it's, you know, during Derby, it's always a little challenging because it's our tax season, essentially. So nobody really gets time off, but we try to take, when Derby is over, a weekend to ourselves where we go to our family's lake house, you know, or, you know, just something. One of the things that I love to do when I come into my hat shop here at Forme Millinery is, instead of just coming in and getting straight on the computer and answering emails, I like to look at my plants. And I like to water them, like to talk to them, and just kind of embrace the space, because my hat shop is a museum of sorts where I'm surrounded by the things that I've collected over the years of my life and travels, and just kind of take in the moment of my personal space here before I dive into the day. So, you know, just little things like that, just taking in the moment and taking deep breaths. And I have mantras everywhere. And even if it's just little things like that. But yes, I would like to do a little bit more self-care just to keep myself sane. But, you know, I think it's important that you take time for yourself, whatever little bits it can be throughout the day.
So tell me one of your favorite mantras.
So it's a little calendar. It has the day, the month, and the weekday, the month and the date. And it says, every day is a new beginning. Take a deep breath, smile, and start again. And I do that every day.
I love it. So I wanted to ask you about, I know that you sign your emails with something that says that you were a Tory Burch Fellow. And I'd love to know what that means. What, I know you did a fellowship, and what did it entail?
Yes. So in 2019, and the Tory Burch Foundation, it's something that Tory started, I believe, in 2017. And she wanted to embrace and support women entrepreneurs. And I was one of 50 women in 2019 that was chosen as a woman entrepreneur, which blew my mind because I'm very familiar with Tory Burch. And, you know, being an entrepreneur herself and the empire that she's created, it was, again, just kind of like with Churchill Downs, you know, just of all the women entrepreneurs out there, for her to recognize me and my passion and what I do and just think it's worthy of recognizing, I was just blown away. And part of being a woman entrepreneur of the Tory Burch Foundation, she invited us out to their headquarters in New York, and it was for a week-long mentorship. And she had her team of experts, of marketers and branding experts and PR experts, and just to kind of sit with all of us and talk about what our goals were and how they can help us and expand what we want to do and finances, you know, really the whole gamut of owning a business, how they embrace us and support us in whatever endeavors that we needed. So it was just amazing too, just to be amongst all these other women entrepreneurs from all different walks of life and to see how they started and where they've come. And obviously I was the only milliner there, but just see how they run their businesses and the struggles they have and the triumphs that they've had. And, you know, it was just great to be amongst these other really successful and inspiring women.
So in addition to the businesses you own, you are also still teaching hat making?
Yes, I love keeping this craft alive because I look at hat making, you know, which is another reason why we started these other businesses, is we want to keep this craft alive. We want to keep the supply houses open. We want to keep these hat shops open. And, you know, a lot of other milliners may frown upon that I teach workshops because they look at it as I'm creating competition. I don't see it that way. I love to teach. And for me, I feel like there's a hat for everyone. You know, if I'm making a hat and someone else is making a hat, we're going to finish it differently. So for me, I feel like there's a hat for everyone. We're all going to finish a hat differently. So for me, the more people that know how to make hats, the more we're going to wear hats. I obviously want to keep this 200-year-old tradition alive by continuing to teach it. But I also look at it as it's the more people who make hats, the more people wear them. And that's why we're all in business. And so, I just love teaching. The little bit that I can do to help keep this craft alive keeps a smile on my face.
Do you hold actual workshops for hat making? Say somebody's in a different part of the country, can they come out to you and spend a couple of days with you and learn the basics?
Yeah, absolutely. So I teach in-person hat making workshops where you can learn the traditional techniques and actually mold the material over the wooden forms, just like I do. So yes, I teach group workshops, 1 and 2 day workshops to do that. I also teach private workshops where if somebody wants to do a week long workshop and learn different techniques and different styles of hat making, learning straw, learning felt, of blocking over the wooden forms, I do that. And I also teach speed workshops where we focus on more of the decorating aspect of it and maybe learning how to sculpt with different materials and trims and do more feather flower making or things like that, where it's just a couple hours or a day long workshop. So I do it all from a couple hours to a couple weeks of hat making. So yeah, absolutely. Also, my book, The Making of a Milliner, I have 9 different hat making projects in that. So if someone's not able to travel to me, one, I can travel to them, but you can also pick up my book and do step-by-step hat making through the instruction there. I do sell hat making kits off my website, which correlates with some of the projects in the book. So I can send you the raw materials and then you put it together yourself. So yeah, I try to provide some different techniques and different ways to do hat making, whether you can come here in person or do it at home with yourself.
It's amazing. You are able, basically, it seems that you can sort of provide the materials or the hat for just about every level, like going up to, I'm guessing some of your couture hats might be in the thousands.
Yes.
Now, what would it cost to just do a basic hat at the hat shop or maybe even a kit? Can somebody do this with just maybe $100 or $200?
Yeah, so the hat kits that I sell that correlate with a hat project in the book, The Making of a Milliner, yes. I would say you anywhere from $50 to $200, you can get a hat kit that we would put together for you, and then you can do it on your own. To get a custom hat from me, where I'm actually making a hat to fit your head size, your shape that you want, the color, the materials, all of that, my custom hats start at $550. And then go up into the thousands, depending on the materials used.
Again, I'm biased, but it sounds like a very good investment to me.
Yes. And
it's, I mean, a work of art.
Absolutely. And it's made with very high quality materials. I'm not just hot gluing stuff together. It's all hand sewn. So it's made to last a lifetime and to really be an heirloom to pass down to generations.
Well, I know you are very busy and we've spent a bit of time talking, and I know you have yet another hat shop that you have to be checking in on, but I wanted to ask you sort of a question we like to pose to people. If you were to host a dinner party with 5 created guests, living or dead, who would they be and why? Or maybe for you, what would their hats look like?
Wow. So I've put some thought to this, and different people from different genres for several different reasons. So one would be Buddha, because, you know, Buddha, I'm a spiritual person and I like to live a life of mindfulness and being kind and, you know, like I said, trying to do this more self-care type of regimen in my life. And so, yes, we have to have a little bit of that at the dinner party, I think. And then Oprah Winfrey, of course, you know, I feel like a woman of inspiration and just gratitude and wisdom definitely has to be there. I mean, she's someone who comes from very humble beginnings. So I think she would be a great person to have. Martha Stewart, of course, the creative person at the top of their list. I would probably ask Martha, you know, what would you do with my business? I'm always curious what people at these statures would do with my business to make it easier. And because I kind of sometimes feel like I'm just kind of trucking along doing this as I go. So I'm always open to suggestions. Frida Kahlo, she, of course, is this amazing, inspiring artist. She's inspiring to me because someone who had personal struggles, she looked at painting as her outlet. And without painting, she would have felt like a lost soul. So she says, and I kind of feel like that myself. Without, you know, my art is my outlet, my hat making is my outlet. So regardless of what's going on inside or outside, millinery still brings me back to my center. And then Lily Deshaies, I would invite. She is my favorite hat maker of all time. She's from the 1800s. And just knowing of her beginnings, of how she started, it kind of reminds me of myself. You know, granted, she lived in a time where hats were prominent. Every person wore a hat on their head every day of every moment. But she's just an inspiring woman. And I have a little shrine to her in my hat shop, because I feel like that's kind of where it started, of my love for hats was with through her. But Lily Deshaies, she probably would wear her own hat. Mm-hmm. She may not wear my hat, but she might wear her own hat. I probably would make, you know, for Frida, a floral bouquet of sorts to wear on her head. Martha Stewart, I feel like she's got a little groove in her step. I kind of feel like she'd wear something kind of what I'm wearing, but maybe like a fedora as well, a style with a little sass to it. It's kind of what I feel like with Martha Stewart. Oprah, big brimmed for sure. Something a little bit more simple, a felt hat of sorts with Oprah. And then Buddha, kind of like with Frida, I feel like something floral and colorful, gold and gems and just beauty.
I'm envisioning it. What a dinner party you would have.
Yes, yes. We'd all look fabulous, bottom line.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. You've been an inspiration. I don't know how you do it. I really don't. And you're smiling and you just opened a shop a few days ago and you have multiple things happening and I love it.
I couldn't ask to be doing anything else. I mean, if I have to work my booty off, I might as well be doing it in the hat world. So I'm so grateful to be doing what I love to do and to also have a husband, because I guarantee you, he did not think he was going to enter the hat world when he met me. I'm sure of that. So the fact that he's also embraced this world with me, you know, I couldn't be doing it without him and my support team. And I'm sure there's something down the road. You know, we've always thought about opening up a hat museum, the only one here in the United States. And so, you know, there's still more to grow, believe it or not. So we're not done yet.
Well, we wish you luck. You must keep us posted on everything.
Yes, absolutely. If you need a hat, come to Kentucky. We got it all for you.
I will take you up on that. I'm not sure about 2024. You may be busy, but I will take you up on that. I'd love to see
you. Yes, yes. Women Create is an inspiration, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it and amongst all the talented women that you all support and talk about. So thank you so much for having me be a part of that world. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you again for joining us today for our World of Women Create podcast. In a world filled with endless stories, it is our mission to share the memorable personal journeys and lessons learned of the extraordinary women in our community. Their stories are stories that enlighten us, inform us, and ignite the creativity that lives in each of us. Women Create is grateful that you are part of our creative world.